What's happening, Catskill? You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. This is Chuck Ansbacher, Broody Duck, signing off.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we've got all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you today, including we'll hear from Jasmine Gripper, the executive director of the Alliance for Quality Education, about Governor Kathy Hochul's proposed budget, what it includes for children and families, and what it leaves out. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves.
Controlled.
On air, in air, channel.
Connection.
And the moon
turns to blood.
A stream runs through.
This is the network, network.
This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news.
This
is the network.
This
is the news.
This
is the network.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at wgxc.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bob Wills Architecture of Rhinecliff, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Ted Remsnyder is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Greene County legislator Michael Bullock has proposed a measure that would allow county lawmakers to carry firearms at public meetings. The Catskill Republican made the proposal in a discussion held at a meeting of the legislature committees on January 18th. The conversation focused on a resolution stating that only members of the New York State Police, Greene County Sheriff's Office, or any village or town police department in the county be allowed to carry firearms, concealed or otherwise, onto county property. In that discussion, Bullock argued that an exception should be made for elected officials. Quote, I think there should be an amendment to this resolution that allows elected officials who are licensed to carry to do so if they choose in this building, unquote, he said. Quote, we do come here after hours. I'm duly trained and I'm pretty confident in myself to protect myself, unquote. Bullock said later that he wants the right to defend himself if an incident occurs during a legislature meeting. quote, "It's important that I'm able to defend myself, not just having security at the front desk," unquote, he said. Quote, "I'm a law-abiding citizen with a pistol permit. I'm very comfortable with a pistol, and I should be afforded that right to be able to protect myself," unquote. Bullock pointed out that he's uncomfortable sitting with his back to the door during meetings held after 4:30 p.m. when sheriff's deputies were no longer stationed in the building. During the meeting, Coxsackie Republican Charles Martinez seconded Bullock's motion before Greene County Attorney Edward Kaplan suggested that if an amendment was made by the legislature to define which elected officials would be permitted to carry firearms. Kaplan suggested the amendment be limited to members of the legislature, with Cairo Democrat Harry Lennon adding that it should only be applied to current members of the body. When asked, Kaplan agreed to investigate whether the proposed policy would create problems with the county's insurance coverage. The legislature eventually approved the original resolution unanimously. Bullock said in lieu of amending the newly approved resolution that the right of a legislator to bear arms on county property could be added to their job descriptions. The lawmakers are exploring that option. Read more about the story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mid-Hudson News reported 17 new deaths from COVID-19 were reported in the Hudson Valley by the State Health Department on January 18th. 9 of those were in Dutchess County and 1 in Greene County. Columbia County reported 178 more cases on January 18th. Albany County reported 2 more deaths on January 20th and over 600 new positive coronavirus cases. A man in his 60s and a woman in her 80s were the latest fatalities there. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy said in the Times Union, and I quote, "This is now the 5th consecutive day we've announced at least one person losing their life to COVID-19 complications, and these latest 2 bring our total so far for the month of January to 25, end quote.
The New York State Public Service Commission January 20th announced it had approved a 3-year rate plan for utility national grid customers in upstate New York. In rendering the decision, the commission slashed the company's requested rate increase by more than 30%, according to a press release. Quote, "The joint proposal we adopted today allows for funding for the company to maintain safe and reliable service while moderating rate impacts during the term of the rate plan and mitigating the impacts of ratepayers suffering the financial consequences of the pandemic," unquote, said Commission Chair Rory M. Christian. Quote, "Further, this agreement is consistent with our nation-leading clean energy initiatives as well as our social and economic policies," unquote. The decision established a 3-year rate plan for electric and gas service provided by National Grid for the period July 1, 2021 through June 30, 2024. It allows revenue to increase by 1.4% for electric and 1.8% for gas in the first year, and by 1.9% for electric and gas in the second and third year. The approved plan keeps annual electric and gas increases for consumers between 2 and 3% for the next 3 years. National Grid provides electric service to approximately 1.6 million customers and gas service to approximately 600,000 customers in upstate New York.
Mike Goodwin and Will Waldron report in the Times Union that one worker was badly injured in an explosion of a 275-gallon oil tank in a shed at a boat shop in the Coyman's Landing Marina on January 20th. Officials familiar with the incident said an explosion was heard, but that they did not know the cause of the blast. The injured man was flown away on a medical helicopter at about noon. Supervisor George McHugh, in an interview with the Upstater, said, and I quote, "There are a lot of waste oil barrels and 3 boats there that are on fire, so that is the issue right now, trying to contain the fire. It looks like they have it pretty well contained and under control because I don't see any smoke right now," end quote. This is the second recent major fire along the Hudson River in this southern Albany town. On October 27th, a large fire at the scrapyard at the port of Coyman's sent chemical-smelling smoke into communities along the Hudson River for several hours. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Noah Eckstein is reporting for Columbia Green Media that the city of Hudson has been awarded a $1.4 million grant from the State Department of Environmental Conservation as part of its water quality improvement project program. Hudson Common Council January 18th voted unanimously to authorize Mayor Kamal Johnson to enter an agreement with the DEC for the funding to pay for the construction of a combined sewer separation system and sewer repairs. The council vote authorized the appropriation of an additional $350,000 from the Department of Public Works Sewer Fund as the required local match for the program. Quote, "I'm ecstatic," unquote, said Rob Perry, City Department of Public Works Superintendent. The project was originally proposed in 2014 when the city was awarded $600,000 as part of a community development block grant. After a three-year environmental review, a failure to secure additional funding delayed construction. The proposed new sewer system will separate the waste material from rainwater. It will send the clean, filtered rainwater into the Hudson River and ensure the sewage is consistently sent to a separate processing plant for treatment. The city will soon put out a request for proposals to find qualified companies to complete the job of repairing the sewer systems. A firm could be accepted by February and receive short-term financing by March, Perry said. Construction would then begin in the spring and conclude in the fall. Construction will involve the excavation of Front Street between Columbia and State Streets. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Noah Eckstein reports for Columbia Green Media that Amber Harris was appointed to a Hudson Common Council Third Ward seat on January 18th. 2 weeks before, Calvin Lewis Jr. declined to accept the position and relinquished his seat. Harris will serve at least through a special election in November. On why she asked to fill the seat held by Lewis, Harris said, and I quote, "I wanted to be that person to help my ward," end quote. The Common Council voted unanimously for Harris. They also voted in three new commissioners of deeds. Larry Elderman Jr., Christopher Dunce, and Nicholas Hodges will serve through January 31st, 2024. And the Common Council also reappointed four members of the Conservation Advisory Council: David Konigsberg, Hillary Hillman, Tom O'Dowd, and Michael O'Hara will serve through December 31st, 2023. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. So far, at least five candidates have announced they want to replace Representative Paul Tonko in whatever ends up being the 20th Congressional District. Right now, that includes all of Albany County and much of the Capital District, but redistricting may not be resolved for weeks, so speculation on an election without a defined district is difficult. But so far, Jack Fallon Underwood, Justin Chairs, Cole Matthews, and Rostelev Raw are running in the Democratic primary election June 28th. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Tonko wants the lines drawn, too. Tonko said, and I quote, "I just hope we're given district lines as soon as possible because the petitioning date is just around the corner. I'd like to know what my district is going to look like and if it's divided where I'm going to go from that point on," end quote. Democrats now control redistricting in the legislature, and the article asked, and I quote, "Will Democrats try to make life more difficult for Elise Stefanik or make re-election easier for Antonio Delgado?" End quote. Tonko's blue district, which lies between Stefanik's now red district on the north and Delgado's purple district on the south, will be altered if Democrats attempt to help one or the other of the nearby swing districts. New York Democratic Party Chairman Jay Jacobs said, and I quote, "Republicans across the country are redrawing congressional lines to favor their candidates. Without being obnoxious, in New York, if lines are drawn with communities and help Democrats, then that is the course we should take," end quote. Republican Liz Joy lost to Tonko in 2020 and is also running again this year.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, sunny with a high near 14 degrees. Friday night it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around minus 4 degrees. And on Saturday, sunny with a high near 20 degrees. And Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 9 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Tune in Creative Community Voices on the air at 90.7 FM on Friday, January 21st, including at 10 a.m. on the Global Agogo show. We'll take a deep dive into South African jazz and also hear tracks from Nakumba System, Sons of Kemet, and Manu Chawa. At noon after the local news, Jared Wiggishud is live with the Sugar Shack Jukebox from the basement of the First Presbyterian Church in Hudson on Warren Street with rock, soul, R&B, reggae, and more. At 4 p.m., we're live in Acre with the WGXC Afternoon Show. At 6, we're live in Catskill with the teens from Clubhouse Radio playing their music and telling their stories until 7 p.m. when different teens take over the airwaves. With the Bound by Books program takes over with a discussion of local reading material. Then later hear from Jimmy Cliff, Nina Simone, and Billie Holiday on All Mixed Up at 8 p.m. And Guy and Friends take over with techno and more at 10 p.m. on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Matt Ullery weaves multiple global influences into the music of his Loom Sextet, and we'll hear a cinematic piece on the next Deep Threes. Plus tracks from Spring Heel Jack, Adam Bayer, and C.J. Boland. Deep Threes. Where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, January 21st. Early this frigid morning, we see negative 6 in New Kingston and 7 degrees in regular Kingston. Couple that with some stiff breezes and we have dangerously sub-freezing temperatures this morning. That means frostbite is possible on exposed skin, so layer up, bundle up, and protect those precious extremities. Things warm up a little bit this afternoon. A high of 15 is expected at 2 p.m. Overnight, the mercury plummets again. Dangerous conditions reappear after 6 p.m., and we will see negative 2 degrees by dawn. Saturday will be dry and a little warmer with a high of 20 degrees and calmer winds, making conditions just freezing. 13 degrees overnight takes us into a dry Sunday with a high of 30 degrees. Monday will have a high of 26 and is looking still bereft of precipitation. However, Tuesday, that looks like it may change. Sunset today will be at 4:40 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:13 a.m. Looking way up, we see incoming plasma stream flowing from a mid-latitude coronal hole is due to arrive on Monday. Solar wind speed is currently 440 kilometers per second at 3.4 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 15 megahertz until dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 60. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Laura Kuhn of Millbrook, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Over here, curtain lights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing a part, we know every card by heart. Over here, curtain lights, this is it, we'll hit the heights, and oh what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it. We'll hit on with the show. This is it.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Joe Biden as president of the United States, the difference that he has made, 6.4 million jobs, that has a nice ring to it.
Nancy Pelosi celebrated President Joe Biden's first year in office and the administration's progress in fighting the pandemic, crediting him with stimulus payments and expanding COVID-19 vaccine access. The speaker said more needs to be done, including improved access to childcare and universal pre-K to get more people back to work. Republicans see things differently, accusing the president of missing the mark on the economy, COVID, immigration, and the Afghanistan withdrawal. John Thune of South Dakota.
Pretty much on every level, this administration has been a failure. And I believe the only way they can fix and cure that is to quit listening to the far left, to get away from the radical agenda that is driving their decision-making process and come to the middle.
And opinion polling over the president continues to be unfavorable. The latest figures show Americans disapprove of Biden's performance 56% to 43%. The January 6th committee wants to talk to former President Donald Trump's daughter Ivanka about a conversation she witnessed that day between Trump and Vice President Mike Pence. The panel is reviewing newly acquired White House documents, including draft tweets, a legal memo, and a handwritten note. Georgia's Fulton County District Attorney has requested a special grand jury for her investigation into possible attempts by Trump to interfere with the 2020 general election. Trump insists he did nothing wrong when he asked the Georgia Secretary of State to look into alleged voter fraud. President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris were unified in their messaging Thursday on a possible invasion of Ukraine by Russia.
If Putin takes aggressive action, we are prepared to levy serious and severe costs, period.
Biden faced scrutiny for making a distinction between a minor incursion and a full-blown attack, possibly indicating Russia had some wiggle room for what it might do in Ukraine. The Supreme Court rejected an attempt by abortion providers challenging the Texas 6-week ban to send the case back to the lower courts. The law went into effect 5 months ago, severely restricting abortion access in the state. A federal appeals court ruled two California counties closing gun stores as non-essential businesses during the pandemic in 2020 violated the Second Amendment. Lower courts had sided with Los Angeles and Ventura County officials, who said gun stores were not immune from shutdown orders. As the Omicron variant surges, school districts across the country are scrambling to staff classrooms. Becky Pringle, president of the National Education Association, said teacher shortages are not a new problem.
There are literally not enough staff to keep schools open. This is the tragic consequence of decades spent chronically underfunding education and shortchanging students.
The NEA called for short-term investments in testing and masks and long-term investments in classroom resources and better pay. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Mera Matagama ton la manome konfa Tani la tobi tambe bwat tabwe pon Pomboti tabwe Mama nyani nyama tegendi me nyula tabwe moni Ala pon sondone meme nize papa longola Yeta anugu mengo abome moninga he Thank you. Me fog le we. Me fog le we. Me fog le we. Me no go we. Me no go we. Me no go we. Me no go we.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Jasmine Gripper, who is the Executive Director of the Alliance for Quality Education in New York. We certainly talked to Jasmine quite a few times over the years about the need for more funding in our school system. The governor's budget has been released this week. So, Jasmine, how did children and families fare so far in what the governor's proposing in the budget?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark. Children and families have some good news and some bad news. The good news is for the first time in a long time, education and the schools are fully funded in the state budget. Governor Kathy Hochul has put in the full Foundation Aid amount, which is $1.6 billion, and a total of $2 billion increase to public schools for the next year. And so really excited to be in this moment where we're not fighting the governor for the monies that our schools need and deserve. But the bad news for children and families is that the pandemic really highlighted and elevated the need for high quality childcare. And we thought the governor, being a woman, someone who herself has struggled with childcare issues as a working mom, would really put a robust effort in really fixing the childcare crisis in New York State. And we were a bit underwhelmed by her proposal for childcare and the lack of state money going in to fix and rebuild our childcare system.
Now, I do believe she did increase funding or expand eligibility a little bit. Is that what she proposing? But
so she did put some money towards childcare. She's saying it's $1.4 billion, but a lot of that is the unspent federal dollars that we received last year. And New York State really has a surplus right now. We have a lot more cash than we expected. And the best economic development policy we can have is to invest in children and families. When children have access to high quality early learning opportunities, the return on investment is huge. And so instead of investing in just the business sector, we need the governor to really put forward a robust investment in childcare, which includes care for infants and toddlers and before and after school care for children up to age 12.
Now, one of the things I always sort of throw out, my father was a public school teacher, and we did a teacher exchange program. We lived in England in 1966, so a little over 50 years ago. They had free public you know, child care for everybody in 1966. And so it always stuns me that, you know, when 50 years later, we're still working on it. But the other thing I always say when my son was younger, I used to say, you know, child care is so expensive that, you know, basically it was equivalent to paying for tuition at a public school, you know, public college. Seems like it's now more equivalent to the tuition at, you know, Harvard and Yale. Seems like it's really expensive. I don't know if people understand how expensive childcare is, and especially for your, you know, your toddlers and your infants.
Yeah, absolutely. At this point, care for toddlers and infants is more than in-state tuition for CUNY and SUNY. The costs are ballooning for parents. For many parents, it's more than their mortgage payment. It is more than their rent payment or more than their car payment. And it really has taken a lot of women out of the workforce because of the rising cost of childcare. Also, the sector is in crisis. During the pandemic, about 1,500 providers permanently closed their doors. And so across the state of New York, we have childcare deserts where families who want care and are willing to even pay for it can't even find a provider. And so we need to address the access to parents to make it affordable and free to low and middle income families, as well as we actually need to do a better job of supporting the providers and paying them a quality wage, and incentivize providers to come back to the childcare industry and those who are in it to help them expand. This is a service that our communities desperately need. And when we talk about a recovery from the pandemic, we are not recovering if childcare remains in crisis. We need a robust investment from the state, and we're looking for $5 billion. And again, the state is flush with cash right now. There's no reason to not be making a bigger investment in childcare at this moment.
Now, when I was living in Brooklyn, particularly Bed-Stuy, a number of years ago, we ran this young green and socialist for city council. And now this young man, a teacher, is in the New York State Senate, Jabari Brisport. I understand he's one of the lead sponsors on, you know, a universal child care bill. I see him tweeting about it quite a bit. How is that being received by other members of the state legislature at this point?
Yeah, Senator Jabari Brisport from Brooklyn, a DSA candidate, is chair of the Children and Families Committee. It's a committee that's usually been chaired by women because it's an issue that's usually been a women's issue. But he has really leaned in to learning about the issue and really becoming a champion. He did a statewide tour. He went all across the state. He literally visited childcare facilities, the home-based providers, and the centers. He did regional roundtables at every tour stop. He surveyed parents and providers in English and in Spanish. He really did a robust listening session to hear about childcare and how to fix this crisis. And so, yes, the bill he put forward is robust. It gets us to universal childcare. The plan is to take us a few years to build up the infrastructure to do it. But Senator Jabari Brisport has been a true champion of childcare, and we're really excited about the collaboration we have with him at this moment and how enthusiastic he's been leaning in about pushing for childcare at the state level.
And I know one of the problems with the childcare community is that, you know, unfortunately, the salaries and the pay for a lot of childcare workers are really low. Is that something being addressed at all?
Yes, that's absolutely something we have to address right away. When we talked to the providers during the childcare tour, a lot of them really, when they looked at their books, were making less than minimum wage. They were in the industry because they cared about children. They wanted to help our families. They were not in it for the dollars, but that is unsustainable. We cannot have childcare centers or home-based providers where the person running the center doesn't have enough money to even feed themselves. And so part of the bill addresses the pay compensation for providers. And the reason why our providers are being paid so low is the ones who do accept childcare subsidies, children who are getting assistance from the state to cover the cost of childcare, what the state pays is below the true cost of care. And so we need the state to increase rates to providers that they pay them back. We need the state to increase how quickly they issue those payments. Providers are often waiting 3 months to be paid for their services. It's an unsustainable model, and it's really the main thing that caused so many providers to close their doors during the pandemic.
Now, just changing the focus, you know, a little bit. You know, obviously at the federal level, there's been this struggle to get this Build Back Better social and climate funding. And this guy, Senator Manchin, keeps on screaming about, you know, doesn't want the child tax credit increase. Is there a child care funding either in the stimulus they already passed or in what they're talking about now with the Build Back Better? And would that help the situation in New York?
Yeah. So the previous stimulus packages did have money for child care. And really, they provided some really fiscal stabilization grants that have finally gotten out the door, thanks to Kathy Hochul, and really helped providers in this moment of crisis. The Build Back Better plan does include a significant investment for money for New York for childcare. The issue is if it's stalled in DC, then we don't get those dollars. And the argument we're making to the governor is New York can't wait for Washington to get its act together. It would be great if the federal government will pass Build Back Better and we get that money from the feds. But if not, New York State needs to be really willing, ready, and able to pick up the tab. We live in the wealthiest state. New York has the money. The taxes we raised last year on increasing taxes on the ultra rich and millionaires have made more revenue for the state than we originally anticipated. The wealthy are doing good. Wall Street is doing good. And if they can, and they're already paying a good share. What we need the governor to do is take the surplus of dollars in the state budget and invest it in this crucial sector.
Well, we only have a minute left. So I'm going to ask a two-part question. I noticed in one of the articles you commented about the need to focus a little bit more on diversity in hiring teachers. And then the second, if people want more information, you know, Sume Kiwi has a website they can visit.
Yeah, absolutely. So one, we know the teacher workforce right now, teachers are struggling and they have this really hard job of trying to teach during the pandemic. And we are heading towards a teacher shortage. And so the governor is actually putting for more effort for a teacher pipeline. But we want that pipeline to really focus on increasing the diversity in the teaching profession, to hire more teachers of color, to really reflect the student body we have in New York State. And of course, if anyone wants more information about the work AQE is doing and the parent organizing we're doing, check out our website, www.aqeny.org, on the social medias, Twitter and Instagram at AQE. NY. And if you want more information about Senator Brisport's bill on universal child care, the bill number is S7595.
Thank you very much. Jasmine Gripper, Executive Director, Alliance for Quality Education in New York. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. We'll be right back.
Experts are warning the public about the mental, social, and physical health risks of using digital devices too much, including the possible damaging effects of blue light exposure for kids and adults in New York who are working and learning remotely. Scott Edmonds is Chief Eye Care Officer at United Healthcare. He says blue light is a low-wavelength, high-energy light that can boost a person's alertness. But doctors and researchers are concerned about the effects it can have over time.
Research shows it's toxic to the retina. It causes the retina to change its metabolism and over the long term could lead to retinal damage.
Experts say the best ways to reduce blue light impact is to keep screens at least 30 inches away from your eyes and to use a blue light filter or glasses. Another recommendation is the 20-20-20 rule. After 20 minutes of computer work, take 20 seconds to look at something that's 20 feet away. Studies regarding the dangers of too much screen time find other side effects, including poor mental health and not enough physical activity. Alana Lowry with Common Sense Media, a nonprofit that reviews online materials designed for kids, stresses the need for children to develop one-on-one social skills.
When you can learn to be a critical thinker from a very young age, that sticks with you. You can't always do that when you're just watching TikTok challenges and stuff like that. When you have FaceTime with people, you learn how to be social. You learn how to interact.
Larry says it's important that parents who want their kids to cut down on screen time set a good example.
It's critical, really, for families to think about how they use media as a family. And I think it's really important for parents or caregivers to model the behavior that they want their kids to have.
I'm Michaela Savitt for New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Yeah, manja.
Yeah.
Yeah, manja.
Yeah.
Yeah, kutu.
Yeah.
Who chicha?
Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. 85 years ago, Congress changed life for millions of Americans by passing the Rural Electrification Act. Now, funds to expand access to high-speed internet from the American Rescue Act could be equally transformative.
Certainly, the pandemic really threw into sharp relief the existing digital divide.
Sean Gonsalves with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance says the funds are sparking solutions like public-private partnerships in New Hampshire to more regional approaches in Vermont. In rural New England, monopoly providers have no incentive to improve access.
For a lot of people, it made it clear that high-speed internet connectivity wasn't a luxury. It's a must-have. It's not a nice-to-have.
One fearless family in Lander, Wyoming has faced down all of the big three grocery chains. Michelle Motherway is the third-generation owner of Mr. D's Food Center. After graduating college, she went home when a national grocery chain used illegal tactics to try to put her mother out of business.
They ran a predatory pricing grand opening ad for 18 months until we turned him into the state.
The legal limit is 3 months. Mr. D's provides 77 jobs in Lander. Nationwide, an estimated two-thirds of every local dollar spent stays within the community. Community spirit and hard work has landed Humboldt, Kansas, population 2,000, on this year's New York Times list of 52 places to travel. They've been working to restore commercial properties to boost the economy.
It's not just that these businesses were struggling to be successful. It's like the roof was leaking. So a lot of these buildings were just in really ramshackle shape.
Paul Clotier co-founded the group A Boulder Humboldt 6 years ago. Now, Humboldt has a luxury weekend getaway destination, a cocktail bar, and a shaved ice parlor where local students work.
There's just something interesting about small town life, possibility, a sense of opportunity that there's some other way to live and work.
Some Native communities are coming together to overcome voting barriers they thought were obstacles of the past.
It's going to take consistent participation from everybody that's already registered, and it's going to take new people coming in to the equation.
Keaton Sunchild with a nonpartisan voting organization, Western Native Voice, says until the Voting Rights Act of 1965, Indigenous people faced Jim Crow-style barriers similar to those aimed at Black Americans, like poll taxes and literacy tests.
They're not as overt as they were in the beginning, but there's certainly still some challenges to getting folks in the ballot box.
After more Native participation in the past two elections, Montana's GOP-led legislature has curtailed same-day voter registration used by Native Americans more than other groups.
We can make a difference, and we will make a difference, but we need all of us, and it's going to be a team effort.
For the Yonder Report and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
चल छैया 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 चल छैया 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 चल छैया 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 चल